From the boardroom to the shop floor, good business runs on good governance. Join esteemed expert in governance, Dr. Nimrod Mbele, for the next hour as he takes us beyond governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's installment of Beyond Governance here at 101.9 High FM. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I'm always pleased to be sharing this space and time with you as the country is facing growing social and political tensions, which include, I'm sure most of you must have seen it, illegal immigration, community protests, issues around law enforcement. These developments, in my view, are unfolding within a broader geopolitical environment where national stability, security, and reputation are increasingly visible. An essential global audience to essential global audiences. South Africa is definitely under scrutiny because of these issues. This speaks to, in my view, governance capacity, how effectively the state manages borders, how the state is effectively managing the rule of law, and the extent to which the application of these variables speaks to public order and social pressure. In my view, when you look at protest service delivery breakdowns, even so-called xenophobic violence, they are not viewed in isolated events or not viewed as isolated events. They are interpreted as a signal of institutional strength, predictability, and state effectiveness, which shapes how the country is perceived. In terms of how the risks are being assessed, and more broadly, how that inform the brand, which is SA globally. I'm sure we all know that countries and organizations are increasingly judged not only economic performance, but by the strength of the institutions, whether you're talking judiciary, whether you're talking law enforcement. In the main, we look at issues of quality of leadership, we're looking on issues of accountability, we're looking on issues of service delivery. So at the heart of these issues, there's always governance, which has become a key driver of trust, reputation, and competitiveness. When you look globally, countries such as Singapore, which often demonstrated how low corruption, efficient public services, and policy predictability, how it has gone to strengthen investor confidence and business certainty. And again, when you look at countries such as South Korea, it shows how strong strong the industrial policy has been, how strong regulatory discipline has been, and how the state has coordinated support, around competitive firms such as Samsung. When you look at the continent, in Rwanda and Mauritius, these are two pretty much examples that you can also draw from Botswana, if you like. When you look at Rwanda and Mauritius, these countries illustrate how governance choices have influenced the national reputation, investment confidence, and economic positioning. And again, when you cast your eyes here at home, with the picture slightly more complex, we can quickly look at the state capture, the challenges in the state-owned enterprises. We know what happened at Eskom. We know what happened in Transnet. We also know what happened at Prasa. We also know how the private sector organizations such as McKinsey, KPMG, and Bosasa, as well as Steinhoff, these are clinical examples of how if we fail to address or to have a governance that is acceptable, that is a building block for economic recovery or even confidence, we're more likely to suffer in the long term. These issues in my mind are very clear in terms of what kind of message is being put forward, which is governance is not only just a compliance issue, it is a brand issue. It is therefore important and it shapes how countries and organizations are perceived around the risk and the confidence it creates. In tonight's show, perhaps maybe the thrust of our conversation as I'm foregrounding these issues, that what does South Africa's governance reality say about its brand and what is required to rebuild, you know, trust and confidence. So to help us unpack this very complex issue, we joined by Annelien Zimande Mapanga, who is a corporate communication specialist. Without any waste of time, let me just quickly bring in Alan. Good evening and welcome to Beyond Governance, ma'am.
Good evening, Nimrod. Good evening to the listeners. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. In the meantime, can I just obviously get the audience, the audience of the show, the listeners of the show, to weigh in anticipation of some critical points that will be, you know, shared by my guest Anneli here. Our WhatsApp line is 061-895-1019, and your thoughts and views are most welcome via my X handle, which is _@DrMbele. Meanwhile, we also want to thank Zama for organizing the show, and Craig, who's on the controller, coordinating, you know, the interface with the market. Before we start, who is Anneli?
Anneli is a public relations expert. I have over a decade in the field. And yeah, I've spent time crafting campaigns, rolling out campaigns nationally for big brands such as Dove, Vaseline. Yeah, I won't mention others, but I have a strong passion around how to craft narratives to speak to society, consumers, community, and to help people understand more about the brands that they love.
You're certainly the right person to be giving us insights on this very important topic, Anneli. Perhaps maybe by way of starting, I mean, I foregrounded our conversation in the context of what is happening. I'm sure everybody knows about the so-called xenophobic attack, civil unrest, and so on and so forth. All these issues, why, if I may, you know, more broadly say, why should ordinary South Africans care about governance from the brand perspective, and how countries' reputation affect people's everyday life, from jobs and investment and opportunities here?
Yeah, exactly as you've said it. The reputation of a country is not something that you leave into the hands of your opponents, or you sort of just hope that it will craft itself. You have to be very intentional. In my experience, having worked in big organizations, as I mentioned, we define who is our target audience. Our target audience could be the people within the organization, which is the employees. It could be people external to the organization. And then we have to define that even further. Is it men? Is it women? Is it people within the ages between 18 to 60? And what is the action that we want these people to take when they interact with our product? And at the end of the day, a country is it's a product in a way. And the reason I say that is when you put out the country's narrative out there, it can either encourage people to want to invest in the country, or it can discourage people from investing in the country. And the reason why that's important is we need the country to grow. We just had Youth Day yesterday. People are talking about how the real youth unemployment is actually sitting at around 70%, which is incredibly concerning. And if this is indeed true, then we need a plan of action against this, right? If you look at the early 2000s, South Africa had a very strong national identity. We declared to ourselves that we were a country that was alive with possibility. This was the national campaign. We then shared and rolled out this campaign externally to the world as well. And the result of this was a rise in direct investment into the country, which strengthens the currency, which strengthens the economy, which strengthens tourism, because a lot more people want to come into your country to experience it for themselves. And those are the economic offshoots of having a strong country vision, identity, and reputation, narrative, and story that you are proactively driving as a country. You're not just leaving it to chance. Because if you do leave it to chance, Nimrod, and the listeners, what happens is that AfriForum can go to the United States of America and can tell everyone that there is a white genocide in South Africa. And because we were not proactive in driving our own narrative, it's actually so much easier for those kind of stories to stick.
You know, I'm quite interested with that the last example that you've just made around a particular actor group within in South Africa, which is the AfriForum, to your point, and extent to which has been peddling disinformation, you know, particularly from a white genocide point of view, because it is common, it's a fact that that does not all exist, or such does not exist. But can you just mull over that particular line of thought? We'll come back in a second after the break.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Good evening. Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. It's now 22 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock. I'm joined by Anele Mapanga, who's a communication specialist. The thrust of our conversation is, how does a country's reputation affect people's daily lives, from jobs, investments, and opportunities? In this particular, you know, the line of thought comes at the back of, you know, the xenophobic attack that we've seen. And interestingly, before we took the short break, Anele made some very important points about being intentional in defining the defining what is the product and driving a particular specific narrative, which can either encourage or discourage investments. And you know, the biggest issue that she raised before we took that short break, obviously, was the unemployment rate, you know, which sit at the north of 40% when you want, if you use a broader definition of unemployment. But and that picture is also even more staggering when you look at youth unemployment, you know. So I think let's just hold on to those big ticket items. You also made an assertion about how, in your view, AfriForum has misinformed, you know, the global north around the so-called, you know, white genocide, and you also made a very interesting point about the need for being, you know, the need to be proactive in your claim. In the past, you've also indicated that, you know, we used to have a very strong identity, which went along the lines of South Africa has a strong, or South Africa has potential. Two things. Right. One, that brand promise. Where are we with that brand promise? And secondly, why are we not being able to drive, or at least there's a perception that we're not being in a driver's seat in orchestrating a narrative that puts South Africa as a brand, despite these old problems, worthy of investment?
Yeah, look, you know, at the end of the day, you need to help consumers, or in this instance, citizens, to contextualize the data that they are receiving. So what the media does, what AfriForum does, is they are offering a context. They are offering interpretation. Facts on their own, you know, can be objective, is the first thing. And what I mean by that is AfriForum is able to take data of farm murders that are concerning and that ought to be addressed, but they are able to give us interpretation to say this is happening because there is a white genocide. The government then comes out reactively to say, no, this is not an indication of a white genocide. This is actually as a result of problems around crime in the country. So the point that I'm making here is that when you do not come out as the government to say, we have the stats around the illegal immigrants that are in the country, and we can offer these explanations to the citizens and to the rest of the world, and also this is what we are doing, you actually end up in a situation where people think that the problem is bigger than it is, because you are not leading in interpreting the data and interpreting the facts. When we're coming out of 1994 as a country, we're not a country that has, you know, data that backs up that we are alive with possibility. That was based on a promise, like you said. So a lot of the storytelling that you take nationally, domestically, but even internationally, always needs to be based on a promise. It needs to be based on the interpretation that we are giving to the world on who we think we are. And I think a lot of the time, we as South Africans think that everything has to first be perfect, Nimrod, in this country before we can say, yes, we are a place of excellence. Yes, we are a place alive with possibility. But here's the reality is that the issues that we face as a country, which is immigration, are the same issues that are faced in other countries. If you look at the rise of Donald Trump, for example, Donald Trump rises on the promise that he is going to build a wall between Mexico and the United States in order to address what he perceives to be a burning issue around irregular immigration. So that tells us this is not something unique to South Africa. Similarly, when you look at the slow or sluggish economic growth in South Africa that sits at about 1.6% right now. If you compare that to other developing nations, if you look at the UK that currently has a economic growth of 0.8%, if you look at France, the growth is sitting at 1.1%. If you look at the US, the growth is sitting at about 1.4%. So we are seeing a pattern around Western economies and countries that have been linked to Western trade allies and deals that are experiencing sluggish growth. And if the government does not give us that interpretation to say, well, the reason why we are facing challenges around high cost of living, high unemployment is A, B, C, D, then the popular narratives around government incompetence will find credibility and legitimacy, whether or not they are not true. And I am not saying that our government is not incompetent. That's actually not the point I'm making here. The point I'm making is that there's a bigger agenda that we all need to concern ourselves with as citizens. And that agenda is to draw investment to our country. And it is in everyone's interest, one, for people to perceive our country favorably, and number two, for ourselves to perceive the country favorably, so we have social cohesion in the country, within the country.
Well, if you just join us, I'm having a very interesting conversation with Anele Mapanga, who is a communication specialist, giving us her perspective on how to grade credibility of a country or an institution. You know, Anele, one of the things that you raised that is so important, which it's around the identity. You know, I still believe we are alive with possibility. Perhaps maybe we're not articulating those possibilities well enough. But if we are to be strengthened around being alive with possibility as a brand promise, that has to also look at every key actor group. I mean, business has a specific role to play. Government has got a specific role to play. From government point of view, we know that our borders are porous and enforcement at the border post has been lack, has been weak, and is compounded by corruption. We know what happened in the Home Affairs visas and all manner of malfeasance. That's one part. The other part that you know, we have to look at from a reputational building, you know, or from the brand integrity, is that you also have to look at the market, you know, because illegal foreign nationals who are flooding South Africa, they are specific markets. You know, we know that there are sectors of our economy that consistently employ illegal foreigners. It has been documented. Mm-hmm. So what is that, you know, employers? Because it's not only government responsibility. Yes, it's common cause that government has failed when it comes to managing borders. And invariably, that also was exacerbated by the market. To what extent, in your view, that these issues need to be linked or addressed simultaneously? Because without a market, we'll not have influx of illegal foreigners. Because in the absence of the market, there's no incentive. You know, to what extent do you think, you know, the market has also incentivized or compounded the problem of influx, and how can it be addressed?
So you mentioned a couple of things. I think what really made us a place that was alive with possibility when we all believed in that was the public-private partnerships. I think the foundation of any great nation is business people and politicians working together. And right now in South Africa, business and politicians are pulling in different directions. And the reason for that is the break of promise. It's the break of trust. So a major thing that needs to be done that PR is actually really good at fixing is this lack of trust. And if you look around the world, right, there's an organization called Edelman. Every single year, they release a report called the Edelman Trust Barometer Report. They look at how do people feel? What is the public sentiment towards authority, whether that is the media, whether that is the private sector, and whether that is the government? And over the years, how the public feels globally, we are seeing declining trust levels in these places of authority, which is why you are seeing citizen journalism is growing. People are more likely to believe, you know, a podcaster, someone who has a following on TikTok, someone who has a following on Instagram. And that has its positives because it puts the power in the hands of citizens so that we can have a more active citizenry. But obviously the draw sides are obvious as well, right? Because you are not able to really control what the citizens can do. If you look at an organization like March and March, they're not really supposed to be going around and enforcing home affairs issues. We have state institutions that are supposed to be doing this, but when state institutions do not do this, they leave a vacuum, right? And with the declining levels of trust that we have seen around the world, and you know, protests that are happening as well around the world, it is an opportunity for the private sector and for the government to come together. So I would say, similar to the partnerships where now there's an opportunity for you, if you want to go to your local bank, to be issued with a passport, to be issued with an ID, we do need leaders to put their heads together. How do we solve this issue of immigration? How do we make sure that business leaders are not hiring illegal immigrants? How do they take a stand without alienating themselves to the rest of the world? And that support they can find through government as well. I think that's the first thing. Then the second thing, I think, is to allow the space for citizens to be active before they become restless. And I just don't think we have enough touch points where citizens do feel like they are being heard, and that when they do voice out concerns, the government is taking that on board, is taking that seriously. By and large, I think even with the private sector, we've largely checked out the issues of this country. We think that they cannot be fixed. And I think that's a huge mistake. We all need to participate in writing the story of South Africa.
And I think you hit it right on the nail that, both business, labor, and government needs to put their heads together to try and address this particular problem much more proactively. But we do have a structure such as NATLAC, which has been curated specifically to bring thought leaders leaders who are engaged on a basis of data on how to take the organization forward. And why is it structured such as NATLAC? Over and above that, we've had several seminars, investment seminars, which the president has been calling for. Why is it that all these key initiatives are not gaining traction? What is it that we need to unlock to create that big brand or that brand promise about South Africa being alive with possibilities, through the private and public partnership that you eloquently put forward?
Well, one of the things we see organizations doing or brands doing is working with influencers. Influencers, we know, are people in society that others feel that they can relate to. So if I'm working on a brand called Pampers and I'm trying to sell these diapers to moms, the influencers that I use are obviously going to be other moms, right? Because we know that it is very compelling, it is very persuasive to drive word of mouth through someone that my target audience can relate to. And I think, yes, we have Nedlac, yes, we have an opportunity to send submissions to Parliament. And I think some of the ways that these organizations are running are still very outdated. There needs to be more of a pull, right? Through social media, through podcasts. We know a lot of people are listening to podcasts. We know that a lot of people are tuning into talk radio. Why are we not leveraging those platforms to get the submissions to the leaders in the various spaces? Because to be quite frank, nobody has time to be part of a national dialogue. People are at work. People are under a lot of strain, and they can't take this time off to be part of these imbizos. So we need to also reimagine how we are collecting this data, collecting this information from the citizens through platforms that are seamless. Why not create a WhatsApp channel, right, where people can just send through voice notes and that's taken on board and shared, updates are shared regularly with people, for example. I do think it's important, though, to, you know, look at, do we have the right individuals that people see as credible who are in these institutions? I spoke about influencers. The reason why you as a brand would use these influencers is because people feel more seen. They feel like they are represented by those individuals. And so I do think we have an issue where the people who are in the political space, and even sometimes in the private, institutions as well, are not a reflection of what people want to see, right? They don't feel seen, they don't feel represented, they don't feel like these people are a reflection of us. So there is an opportunity to relook who the leaders are and to field people that will actually have more resonance in our society.
I couldn't agree with you more in that the trust deficit that has been created has literally given space to a whole lot of podcasters. Social media has become such a powerful instrument, which has given some individuals, some of which do not have, what's the word I'm looking for, which is the opposite of nefarious agenda, because that's the downside of social media, because it's not every single person who is an influencer is got a correct or is pushing a national agenda forward. We're not going back after the break. When you come back after the break, I want to look at how we can use or leverage on social media to change the narrative. Because, for an example, we know that so much has been done in transforming Eskom. So much has been done in transforming Transnet. So much has been done in transforming SABC. There's so much work that government has done, but we don't get to hear more of these positive stories because we've just been inundated with misinformation and exaggeration of information in most instances. My question is, how do we strengthen a positive messaging going forward using social media outlets and credible leaders who are taking the country forward as opposed to pursuing their own individual agendas? Let's come back after the break.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. It's amazing how time flies. It's now 90 minutes to our 7 o'clock. If you've just joined us, I'm having a very interesting conversation with Alelizimani Mapanga, who is an award-winning corporate communication executive and PR maven. And before we took that break, I wanted, she made something that was so important that, we need to leverage on other pockets of excellence. You know, I'm going to use that word very loosely, on possible influences, because evidently the structures such as NEDLEC and other, noted structures aren't really delivering goods around where the country is going. And it is, well, we can't ignore the role of social media. We can't ignore the role of the so-called influencers. And the question is, we noted very good positive responses. I mean, I was listening to radio not so long ago, and I heard the former public protector, Dule Solomon Tonsela, talking on what has been done around, recouping some of the stolen monies, that were laid to bear in the Zondo Commission. And we also noted Mazanga Commission, a whole lot of, a sizable amount of money, asset has been frozen. So there's not much that is being talked about based on what the work has been done. Surely that gives us a basis to restore confidence, to restore public confidence and trust that indeed government is working. So far, we've been inundated with a whole lot of bad publicity, which does not take this the country forward. Your take on that?
So I think, on some of the issues, right? We do need to hold a mirror up to ourselves. You cannot market a bad product. And that's just what it comes down to. If we don't have the right leaders in places of influence who can actually take the country forward, then we will always have a bad product to give to the rest of the world. And why that's frustrating is that even if we try to come up with a wonderful, beautiful narrative, it won't land because there are potholes, right? And the lived reality of the citizens and the tourists who come to the country is unpleasant. It won't land because of crime, and lack of access to education, lack of access to public health care. And so when I say we need to hold up a mirror to ourselves, we also need to decide as citizens what kind of country we want to live in and who are the leaders who can create that country for us. I've said many a times that South Africa is not, something that we need to take lightly, right? We are shareholders in this business that is South Africa. Citizens forget that a country ought to operate like a business. When you appoint someone in a business as a shareholder who wants to see a return on investment, you are a parent, I am a parent. The return on investment is that if you have a piece of property, when you give it over to your descendants and your children, it will still have retained its value, but not only that, it would increase in value. The state of education in the country, you want it to increase in value. We want to hand over a South Africa to the next generation that has grown, that has exceeded in terms of return on investment. And I just think when we vote, we often are not voting with that in mind, that South Africa is something that I have invested in as an individual, and I want to see this country growing. And so if we can just conscientize people, what is the role, the true role of voting, that you are appointing someone to co-manage or to help manage your investment, your inheritance that you have received by virtue of your birthright as a South African that you will pass on to the next generation, then I think we're starting somewhere. Then we would be able to, from a public relations and a marketing standpoint, get further buy-in from others externally once we have been able to appoint the right, in inverted commas, CEOs, right? We need to appoint the right people in the right places so that they can drive the economy of the country.
Well, that's Anele Mapanga, who is the peer expert, giving us her perspective on how to navigate the complexity around repositioning South Africa as a country that is live with possibilities. We earlier on, when I foregrounded our conversation, are based on the kind of global stuff that we're seeing. The xenophobic attack has unfortunately put us on a very bad position in the context of an African setup. And the issue we fail to communicate evidently, it is that South Africans are not necessarily opposed to any immigration. They are opposed to illegal immigration, of which, unfortunately, some of the African countries are failing to take responsibility for their own inaction, their own inertia in their own countries. What is happening now in Malawi, what is happening in Zimbabwe, what is happening in Mozambique is as a result of failures of those particular states. And people are flooding into South Africa. When you look at the reality in public hospitals, the majority of patients aren't necessarily South Africans. And bearing in mind that the serious cost drivers for medication, people that are working there, and if these public utilities are crowded by people who are not paying for those services, there's very little left for South Africans. In a context of the country that is growing at less than 2% for the past 10 years, we barely grew the economy, which means when you look at the global setup as well, I mean, Alela did correctly point out that when you look at European countries, are too not necessarily growing. So, which means it's so important that we manage our fiscals in a corrective way. What are we doing to try and bring other countries to recognize that they're putting so much pressure on the continent, and we trying to have, well, there's a Brand SA, there's a Tourism SA, and now Pan-Africanism has been thrown out of the picture because more and more African countries who feel very strongly that South Africa is anti-xenophobic, they are now pushing back and doing exactly what South Africa is doing. Is there an end in sight? What is that we're missing that needs to be communicated correctly and adequately? Anele?
Sure. I like you said, it's very layered, you know. I do think that, there are a lot of issues, like I said, and we are not the only country that is dealing with these issues around immigration, with the issues around a lack of growth in our economy. What I do think is important is to contextualize for the citizens why we are dealing with some of the issues that we are dealing with. And we will never be able to do that effectively when we're almost living hand to mouth, right? You almost don't really know what our leaders want this country to look like, or where we want to be in 10 years' time, where do we want to be in 15 years? If you look in comparison to a country like Dubai or a country like Singapore that has been able to achieve enormous growth over the last 30 years by rebuilding their reputation. We know that the Middle East was not a place that anyone wanted to invest in. It was not an attractive place. Their customs were not widely accepted and respected all over the world. And it was a place of, you know, war. And even though there is still war right now in the Middle East with what's happening with Donald Trump, it has, the perception, the reputation of the Middle East has transformed, and it's become a place where everyone wants to send their money. Everyone wants a piece of Dubai. Everybody wants a piece of Saudi Arabia. We just recently, in the last World Cup, had the first World Cup in the Middle East in Qatar. All of this to say, this is the result of when you come together in your country as leaders and you decide, where do we want this country to be? We want to make this a favorable destination from an investment standpoint, from a tourism standpoint. It doesn't happen by accident. And I think what I've loved about Dubai and such countries, your Singapore's, is that it's very clear that they are controlling the narrative. They are proactive. They have made their countries a space that is very cosmopolitan, that is attractive, but also there is the enforcement of the rule of law. And that is crucial to maintaining order, to driving social cohesion in a society, and just making sure that, you know, the people that are coming into the country, which we want them to come into the country, are not coming into the country for nefarious reasons. So rule of law, I think, is also incredibly crucial. And that is something that we have seen in the Madlanga Commission has been absolutely compromised. So now, following from the Madlanga Commission, it'll be very interesting to see what the government does, mm-hmm. right? To say, this is a new South Africa. We have cleaned up the police force. We are enforcing the rule of law. We have border management authority now that is in full swing. We have control of home affairs and immigration. We are on top of things. I think it's going to be so important to launch some kind of a campaign that people can buy into, and that they can feel that, okay, you know, things are changing now in the country. These sort of people flouting regulations, laws, legislations, it's behind us. Mm-hmm. So that we can really start afresh and all live in a country that we are proud to live in, that attracts these investment opportunities.
I could not agree with you more. As we gravitate towards the end of the show, let's have a final quick break, Craig.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. It's amazing how time flies. If you've just joined me, I'm in conversation with Anele Nzimande Mapanga, who is an award-winning corporate communications executive and a peer a guru, so to speak, and we're really getting a sense from her perspective on how does a country navigate such complexities, because a country is a brand which has a particular equity in the market, and so far we can all agree that South Africa, it's not palatable, you know, because of geopolitical issues. However, in as much as there are other variables that you can't control, for example, what happens with the U.S., but we can control how we react and how we reposition ourselves, taking the country forward. So one thing that I want you to reflect on, which is coming out very strongly based on what you say, because you kept on saying we need to, you know, the country needs to, we need leaders, you know, we need to put our aside, or we need to inspire confidence in that the lessons from Madlanga Commission has not been resolved. The lessons mm-hmm. from Zondo Commission are these, and this is how it means for Home Affairs. This is how it means for Treasury. This is how it means for universities. This is how, you know, all these issues, coming up with a new communication plan and strategy to try and bring everybody on board. And this, for me, it says, given all these other, you know, challenges, do you think that, you know, leaders are detached from reality? Because what people are saying, it's not new. South Africans have been mourning and groaning about the crime issue in the townships and everywhere else. Sluggish economic growth because of structural consideration, which is also another, you know, it's another topic that needs to be unpacked. So, in your view, do you think leaders are detached from reality?
I think we need to ask ourselves the question whether or not we think we are being led by the best among us. I think we definitely aren't being led by the best among us, in my opinion. There are great leaders in government, in pockets. And it's almost as if you are a great leader, and Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi has displayed this to us, you're almost punished for that. You're punished if you are putting the country first, if you actually want to do your job, if you actually want to serve the country. So I wouldn't say that it's being detached from reality. I think we live in a culture in South Africa where it is the interests of the party and the interests of the comrades that come first and are often sacrificed at the expense of the citizens and at the expense of the country. And I think that's deliberate. I think it's intentional. To say that they are detached from reality, it almost makes it seem as if, you know, this is something that is happening accidentally. And I think it's very intentional. If we, in our voting, have identified this as a pattern, it would be foolish of us to keep voting in the ways that we have continued to vote, which is why I said earlier, we need to hold up the mirror to ourselves. And we need to understand that a country, it's not just, I don't know, it's not just vibes, right? You need to act as if you are a shareholder and you are appointing a CEO to grow this business, to grow this pie that mm-hmm. we call South Africa, to grow our influence. And that is how we need to vote. You're not voting because this person, you know, is saying the right things, you like this person, or whatever the case may be. There needs to be a very high criteria and high threshold for who gets your vote.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot at stake.
Anna, you know what? We're going to have to leave it here. We definitely need to have a follow-up conversation, because the last bit of our conversation, I think it's so deep, and it's important to, you know, to be given a bit of, you know, bit of impetus. Because this is what is likely to change South Africa moving forward. Thank you so much for coming through. It has been absolutely beautiful hearing your views, which are quite refreshing. And I certainly hope that the listener equally enjoyed your perspective on how, you know, governance and from a perspective of a country, it's not just it's something that is grounded, something that needs to be taken seriously. And one of the ways, obviously, is how to change our voting patterns.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Absolutely. There you go. That is Anele Mapanga, who is an PR guru, giving us a very interesting insight on a very complex issue which South Africans needs to put the shoulder to the wheel in trying to get it right. Obviously, Craig, as we parting ways, thank you so much for being on the controller, Zama. Thanks for organizing, Anele Mapanga here. And it has absolutely been beautiful getting her views. As I conclude, I mean, one could argue that governance and national brand are not separable. Governance determines whether institutions functions, whether rules are applied consistently, and whether trust is sustained. We know that trust in this particular country has not been sustained. And the trust is what ultimately shapes countries' brand. If we don't trust the leaders that we have, we are likely to devalue, you know, what their value proposition is. We're going to have to leave it here. Thank you so much for listening, and we're going to do this again next week.